Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Okay, what's happening? Tinky and Tierney, hour number two here on this Tuesday around the country. CBS Sports Radio, Tinky Barber, Brandon Tierney. And we're coming to you from our studio. Of course, my studio is now my home office, and Tinky is in his home and will be here for a while, obviously separated by uncertainty, but we're still doing what we do. It's the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios. Millions of Americans finance the home of their dreams with their help, and they can help you as well. Rocket Mortgage, push button, get mortgage. Tinky just hit me with that Noah Syndergaard news about the torn UCL right before we went to the break. That is obviously a tough one for the Mets. That goes without saying. So he's not going to pitch the rest of this year, and most or at least half of 2021 will be compromised. So just to expand on that, briefly, that's a crusher for a team that should be pretty good if there's any baseball this year. And Robbie Anderson, who was one of the, last remaining somewhat attractive or marquee names in free agency, he's bouncing from the Jets. He's going to the Panthers, reunited with Matt Rhule. Of course, Anderson played at Temple, and you start to look at the weapons now for the Panthers. DJ Moore, Curtis Samuel, Robbie Anderson, 2 years, $20 million, $12 million guaranteed. Matt Rhule putting things together, of course, with McCaffrey. So you know that things are happening. Wow. Do you like that for Carolina real quick, Teak? You have to like that.
Yeah, of course I do. Anytime you can get new weapons for a young quarterback like Teddy B., Teddy Bridgewater, I think you put him in a better chance for success. And look, Robbie, for some reason, his market was tepid, but I think he got a good deal, and I think the Panthers got a better one.
Yeah, I don't disagree, and I think it was tepid primarily because there's, 10 studs coming out of college, which kind of put him to the back of the rack, if you will, but at least wanted to slip that in. Teak, this is a bittersweet story because she's a phenomenal story. Nothing bittersweet about that, but her path has been altered. All the Olympic athletes across this entire planet has been altered with the postponement of the 2020 games in Japan. That was official today. We all knew it was coming. And I'm talking about Colleen Quigley, Team USA track and field runner, a star on Instagram as well. Incredibly unique path. And Colleen is with us here on Tinky and Tierney. Colleen, how are you today? Welcome to the show. What's going on?
Hey, you guys. Yeah, I'm working from home today too. So,
what are you running?
Actually,
but if you're a track star, how do you work at home? You just run up and down the stairs? What do you mean you're working at home?
Well, I have been doing a lot of my. We can't get to the gym, obviously. So I have been doing a lot of my strength stuff that I would do in the gym, just at home in my living room. I got some free weights, resistance bands, a yoga mat, just the basics. You can't do any like Olympic lifts or anything, but I can do the majority of my strength work. And then luckily I can still just go out and go for my run, and be outside and, not touch anyone, but be outside and do my normal training runs. So I feel really lucky for that.
Yeah, I know how you feel, Colleen. I've evolved into a distance runner in my older age.
And
I can get out and run now. It's great. I run around the neighborhood. I stay 6 feet away from my running partner.
Awesome.
And we're good to
go.
Yeah,
exactly.
Let me ask you.
Yeah, I feel like we might actually see a little resurgence of, running.
You already are.
This and see a lot of people. A lot of people getting outside. And that's really cool. That's kind of a silver lining.
No, you already are seeing that. People are reconnecting with it who have lost it for years. because it's the only way to keep yourself sane when you're locked inside and can't interact with people. As individual as running is, it's also a collective thing, as you know, being a track and field athlete for so long, acquitted yourself quite well at Florida State as a Seminole. But let me ask you, yesterday you knew that the IOC was likely to cancel the 2020 Tokyo Games. I saw your post on Instagram. I started following you, and your post was, was right. There's a lot of athletes that can't do what you do, which is train in your house or go for a 16-mile run in the woods, right? They can't. This would have been compromised for them.
Right.
Are you surprised that they decided to finally do this?
No, I'm not surprised at all. And I think I was just kind of like unemotional about it yesterday. A lot of people were being really nice and reaching out and saying, I'm so sorry. And I was like, you know what? It's okay. Like, yeah, I've been able to do a lot of my training and be, you know, relatively unaffected, which has been amazing. But like, can you imagine swimmers who just can't get in a pool for like a few months? You know, like they can't be ready to compete at the level they compete at for their trials and, you know, to be prepared to compete against the world. That's just not fair. It's not, you know, it's not safe for people to do that. But then when you talk about actually being physically ready to compete at the world level, there's so many athletes who cannot, like wrestlers, you know, you can't stay 6 feet apart when you're wrestling. So stuff like that, where there's just a lot of people who can't practice their sport right now. And, you know, for the foreseeable future, they don't know when they're going to be able to practice again. And so, yeah, they did survey the United States kind of hopeful, Olympic hopeful athletes, and a lot of, you know, 70%+ of them said, like, we can't train right now and we'd prefer to, you know, push this back and postpone. So we definitely were kind of, you know, in agreement about that as a team.
Pardon me. We're talking to Colleen Quigley. Listen, the story, most Olympic athletes, not all, most, know right away that, you know, they might not verbalize it because that obviously wouldn't be incredibly humble, but they know that they're special. They have the Olympics on their radar. It's something they pursue with great vigor and unrelenting passion. You were pursuing a couple of things when you were younger, and I find it amazing that if, you know, and just the way it's worded in your bio here, Colleen, if not for a nudge from her track coach and a visit to Florida State, I mean, that was the impetus behind your explosion into superstardom. Didn't you know, and I know that you were modeling as well, but didn't you know that you were special and that you were a superstar and a possible asset for Team USA? Why did you require a nudge?
Yeah, you know, my dad coached me in high school, and I think both my parents are just super down-to-earth people and just, you know, encouraged me to work hard, encouraged me to do my best, and were always my cheerleaders. But I don't think they ever put that pressure on me to, like, you have to go to the NCAA, you know, you have to go to the Olympics. That was, like, kind of just all on me. And I think I was just taking it one step at a time and taking it one goal at a time. Like, okay, I want to win NCAAs. Okay, I did that. Like, what's the next big thing? And, yeah, that was to sign a contract with Nike and join the Byron Track Club, come out to Portland, Oregon, and start training for the Olympics. And so I just kind of took it one step at a time.
Now that you know that the Olympics are delayed until the summer of 2021, you know, how does this change your mindset? Because I ran track when I was in college for a year and obviously all through high school. And I remember gearing up, like building up to a moment it took months. You know, it was like you had to really think about your training process. How does this change that for you now that you have a year to get back, you know, back into your peak condition for the Olympics?
Yeah. I mean, luckily, like you said, it does take months, and we just had an indoor track season through January and February, and we got to do some really good racing then on the indoor track, but we haven't even started our outdoor track season yet. We were supposed to have a meet April 5th is going to be our first race of the outdoor season, and so this being called off like pretty early, I think, helps. We haven't done that whole like mental and physical, you know, the last 3 months build up part yet. I think it would be really hard to do all of that and then be hit with this crushing news. But now we have time to like, okay, reset, kind of figure out what's our new plan now, which we're still trying to kind of, you know, take it day by day and week by week with our coach to figure out what when we're going to be able to start racing again. We don't know that yet. And so, yeah, we're still training. We're doing our as much as we can, doing our normal thing, and hoping to get more information soon about when can we start racing again and when can we kind of, you know, resume life as normal again.
Colleen, my partner's being a little humble before. He was obviously a great football player, tremendous football player for the Giants, and he's just an elite athlete, and he's pursuing this running, and he's after it all the time, and, you know, he says he's kind of dabbling as he's getting older. He's actually getting really good. He needs that little nudge, though, you know, just to get inside of 4 hours. He's run a bunch of – can you give him – because I'm just going to guess. Teague, you're inspired by Colleen Quigley. I know, man. I know what makes you excited about the running world these days, and I know that she excites you because she's talented. Give him a couple of words to make sure that he gets inside of 4 hours, because I'm getting tired of waiting here, Colleen. I got to be honest with you.
Oh, man, the marathon is so tough. And honestly, I have not run a marathon yet. I think it's something that I'll do eventually. But,
is that right?
You know, right now I'm sticking to the track and sticking to the shorter distances. Yeah, my race is just under 2 miles long with 28 hurdles and 7 water pits. That's the steeplechase. And so, yeah, it's, you know, it's like 24 miles short of a marathon. But I do some, you know, I do long runs on the weekends. Every Sunday I do like a 14 to 16 mile run, is my longest run of the week. But that marathon training is something else. You're just out there for a long time on your feet. And I think that's a lot of time to be in your head, you know, like a lot of time just thinking about how do I feel? How's my body doing? You know, this friggin' sucks. Like, I kind of want to stop. And so it's a lot of time to just be thinking, which can be really, really hard mentally. So I always tell people, you know, the best thing that I do for my training is surround myself with an elite group of other athletes who can motivate me and kind of keep me going in the right direction so that when I want to stop and I want to listen to stop, that I have someone there to cheer me on and to keep me going so that we can all, you know, help each other reach our goals. So, yeah, you got to have a training partner.
Yeah, no, that's good advice. And I do, fortunately, have a good training partner, but he, like me, is getting older, so he can't really keep up anymore like we always want to. Like, I know you have a familiarity with New York Roadrunners. You finished second in the Fifth Avenue Mile a couple of years ago. So your first one better be New York, because that's the best one, at least in my mind, marathon.
Oh, my gosh.
When you decide to do it, that should be your first one.
New York would be a dream. I've done the Fifth Avenue, Fifth Ave Mile. It's just 1 mile straight down Fifth Avenue on the side of Central Park there. And it was, that's the most fun I've ever had in a road race ever. It was just amazing. And New York is a special place for me. So when I do a marathon one day, I don't know when that'll be. I'll definitely have to do New York.
Nice. I'll be a streaker by then. That means doing them over 10 times. I've done 7 in a row, so we'll see if that happens. One more question about the Olympics.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm telling you, Colleen, he doesn't stop. He's all in on this stuff. It's amazing. It's impressive.
That's incredible. Yeah, I mean, I feel like something like that, you have to have a goal. Like, you have to have a reason to get out there and do your training. So you have to have a race or, you know, something to work towards, or else, like, what you're out there, like, what is the point? Why am I doing this? Have a really good goal. So that's awesome that you're going on 7, going on 8.
No, I've actually done 13. The 14 was supposed to be Tokyo.
Oh, geez.
I was supposed to do Tokyo, but obviously got canceled before everything else, before the world shut down. And obviously now that the Tokyo Olympics are canceled, I wonder from your perspective as an Olympian, you were there in 2016 in Brazil. Now you're looking forward to 2021. Like, a lot of people will talk about the dreams of Olympians, and, you know, for you, it's getting under that, I guess, that tough to a crack 9 minute, point in a steeplechase. You know, how do you keep motivated through this time? Because it's hard, you know, when your dream is delayed. I keep seeing that on social media from Olympic athletes. It's not denied, it's delayed. How do you keep motivated during this time?
Yeah, not canceled, but dreams are delayed. Everyone keeps saying that. You know, it is something that we've been working for, you know, ever since 2016 was over. We start thinking about 2020. That's just kind of the name of the game. But I feel like over the past couple years, especially kind of the past 6 months, I've been feeling like I'm just getting stronger and stronger, and I've been working on a lot of things that I would consider are my weaknesses, and that takes time and patience, and, it just takes time for your body to adapt to the things you're asking it to do. But the last, I would say 6 or 9 months especially, have been going really well, and I've just been feeling, really strong in my training. And so I was really, getting excited for a chance to, let that pay off. But I actually think that another year of that is, it's not going to hurt me. It's just, I'm just going to be getting stronger and stronger over the next year. And so if I can just stay focused and not let, not let myself get distracted by all this other stuff going on, just stay focused and use that extra year to keep working on my weaknesses. I think that, I'm not past my peak yet. I'm not past my prime competing years. And so I'm just going to use this next year to really work on my weaknesses and keep becoming a better athlete, because there's always something to work on.
Well, Colleen, I say this with a smile and certainly respectful. From where Tiki and I are sitting, we don't see many weaknesses, right, Tiki?
No, not at all. and good luck to you, Colleen.
Thanks, guys.
I know you got some time before you start getting to the outdoor season, and you got a year to wait to get back to this Olympic dream in Tokyo. But good luck to you. We'll be rooting for you for sure.
Absolutely.
Thanks so much. Thanks, guys.
You got it. Colleen Quigley, obviously decorated career, Florida State, NCAA All-American honors, Olympic track and field runner. And it's just a little temporary pause on the dreams. Nothing more than that. But what is the prime age? Because it's funny, we talk about LeBron and, what he's doing at the age of 35 and his NBA odometer. For exactly what Colleen does, what she runs,
it varies. Yeah, it really varies. Because she's not a distance runner, but she is a distance runner. As she mentioned, it's just over 2 miles, the 3,000 meter steeplechase, which it's a difficult race because it's not really an endurance race. Mm-hmm. You kind of got to sprint, and there's 28, I think, obstacles, including a handful of water obstacles. So it's not just endurance runner. So sometimes you actually get better as you get older because your body just is more mature.
Mm-hmm.
We see that a lot with some of these distance runners can do this until they're to their mid 30s. So she's kind of in her peak right now. She was a stud at Florida State, an 11-time NCAA All-American, winning a bunch of different events over a course at Florida State. So she's still growing, and I think she hasn't hit her peak yet, which is a good thing.
Okay, so let's get into this a little bit more coming up here on Tiki and Tierney. As the Olympics move to 2021, what does it mean for the rest of the world? We'll get into that coming up. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network. Okay, hey, this portion of the Tiki and Tierney Show brought to you by The Game Plan for Success, sponsored by Napa. Napa believes every driver deserves quality parts. That's why you can do it yourself at a Napa Auto Parts store or have it done for you at a Napa Auto Care Center. Either way, that is the Napa know-how. CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line here on Tiki and Tierney is 855-212-4227. That phone's ringing. 855-212-4CBS. Somebody answered that in the house. I can't. I'm on the air. Sponsored by GEICO. Whether you own or rent, GEICO makes it easy, of course not, to bundle home and auto insurance. Having a home is hard work, so always try to read when the phone's ringing. Get a quote at geico.com.
That's why I do not have a home phone. I'm serious. We don't have one.
Oh, God.
I mean, we used to have a line because you had to have one when you got an internet service.
That's why. That's the only reason we have it, Teague.
But now that it's changed, we got a new internet package with our service provider, we don't even need the home phone anymore. So, I mean, we never, ever used it.
Hold on, Teague. I'm going to actually see what this is. Watch here. Hello? Who is this? No, they hung up.
Of course they did.
That's funny. But it went right to the dial tone, not even a slow transition to the quietness and then the click. It was, as soon as I said hello, it was dial tone.
Nice.
That was weird. I hear you talk about track, right? And I almost wonder, and I actually think I know the answer to this, right? I almost get the sense that, money aside, because I don't think you would have made the bank in track, in field, that you made in the NFL, even though you played at a point where, you know, you made good money, but if you were playing today, you'd probably have $40 million more in the bank for sure.
It's crazy. I remember guys used to say that when I was playing. Like, oh, you guys make so much more money than we do.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
I look at
these guys now, I'm like, geez.
All relative, man. You know that.
It's all relative.
But if you were given the choice, and I know that you know, I know how you think with a lot of things. Everything is an experience, and you extract so many things from all the things that you've done,
yeah,
which is why you're well-rounded. But if you can suspend that for a moment, like, I almost get the sense that you would, if you had a chance to be an Olympic track star, right, and never play a snap for the Giants or in the NFL, like,
GT,
track is your real passion.
That's what I wanted to do. Well, that's what we were really good at. Like, football, we were okay at, but I wasn't, like, a five-star recruit. I don't even think I was, like, a three-star recruit coming out of Cape Spring because we weren't good. We were 5-5. A couple of those years, maybe. I mean, I don't think we ever won more than five games.
Did you ever win a playoff game in high school?
I don't think I played in a playoff game in high school.
That so, kind of team. Wow.
Yeah, but we were good athletes.
Yeah.
But the reason you knew that we were good athletes was because Rondé was the indoor national champion in the 55-meter hurdles, and I was the national runner-up in the long jump, jumped 24-6 my senior year. And so, you know, I was three-time state triple jump champion, and you know, 4x4 relay. You know, we finished second in the state. Like that's what I loved. And we'd go to like the pin relays, right? Yeah, the pin relays.
Yeah,
and you'd see, you know, like superstars would be there, and it's what I had like aspired to be because it felt like I could touch that. The NFL, we didn't live close to a team. I mean, the Redskins were my team, so to speak, but they were 2.5 hours away up in D.C. / Maryland. And so we didn't go to football games. I loved football, and I was good at it. But if you would have asked me when I was going into my senior year in high school, what did I want to be at 168 pounds or whatever I was, I would have wanted to be a track star. And in fact, when we were picking schools, one of the criteria was that you had to allow us to run track because a lot of the schools frowned upon it.
Yeah.
You know, they would say, no, you are a football player. In the spring, you are going to be doing spring football and the spring workouts. And, you know, you don't have time for track and field. And that disqualified a lot of the schools that we were looking at.
Did anybody pursue you from out west, like a USC or a UCLA? I know Michigan for football, obviously.
UCLA.
Virginia.
Yeah, UCLA we looked at.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but it ultimately was too far. Like, at that point, I think we had been on a plane once, maybe not even.
Yeah.
So, like, it became daunting to think about it.
Which you didn't want to leave Mama. I get it.
Well, I didn't want to leave Mama and go that far. I mean, I can't leave her. But
you wanted to leave Mama and have a little space and have a little fun, but just not that far from Mama.
Yeah, not the other side of the country. And so, yeah, but they would have allowed us to run track because it was a big thing out there.
Yep.
Clemson would have allowed us to run track because Clemson had a really great program. In fact, their head coach, Randy Bungard, ultimately became the head coach at the University of Virginia was there. And so, like, it was part of my and my brother's criteria to go to school. You had to let us run track. Now, what happened when we got to school is that Rondé dislocated his elbow.
Yep, that
so,
I know.
So he never ended up running track. I did it for a season and, you know, set the school record on my first jump.
What?
It was great.
On
my first jump.
Wow.
And it was in fantastic shape. But then my running back coach, Ken Mack, he said to me, he's like, Teek, if you really want to be a college football player, you can't be 170 pounds. You can't be 170. You got to be, you know, 200 pounds. You got to be solid. And you got to be thick. And so I made the commitment to football instead of track and field. Put on 20 pounds, and before you know it, I was 205 pounds of muscle, and my track and field dream was gone then because you just can't lift 200 pounds.
No, I get that.
You know.
But
what then, I mean?
But all these guys, they're all like Ben Johnson, absolutely yoked.
Yeah,
all these guys were jacked,
but they all weighed like 175 pounds.
Is that okay? They just look more.
They
cut
just
up
look
then.
It,
got it.
Right? They got just it. Look it. They look like they're humongous, but they're not really that big. Like
but
the,
here's what, Teek, here's what I don't
are
get.
Smaller.
But
that's why. That's why when Usain Bolt, like they're all little. You know what I mean? They're not. They're not 5'11". You know, a lot of them back then were like 5'8", 5'7". That's why when Usain Bolt came, and he's 6'4", like the mechanics of running didn't. It didn't make sense. Like, you shouldn't be able to have the leg turnover, like how fast your legs hit the ground. At 6'4", you shouldn't have the leg turnover to be successful as a sprinter. You can be a great middle distance runner being that tall, but at 6'4", 6'3", 6'4". Like, you're too tall. Carl Lewis defied it a little bit because he was on the tall side. But for the most part, tall runners weren't successful. It was the short ones who had quick bursts and, you know, quick turnover, and they were muscular, so they had power. You know, speed is a function of strength and turnover. And so you look at a guy like Usain Bolt, and just no way he can be that fast. Yet he was, and that's why he was marvel to watch. And it was so when I went to the Olympics in 2008 in China in Beijing, the one thing that I had to see was Usain Bolt run, and I was lucky enough to do that in the Bird's Nest, and it was spectacular.
Yeah, but here's what I don't get. Okay, so your early sporting dreams were guided by track and field. Okay?
That's right.
Okay, obviously an incredibly
talented. Because it was the first thing that we were great at. Like, gotcha. We were good football players, but we weren't, like, great football players.
I gotcha. Obviously good enough to get a full ride to go play in the ACC. So as much as you keep saying you weren't a five-star recruit, you were still.
You forget what Virginia was then.
Yeah, but they were still in the ACC. It doesn't matter what they were. They were in the ACC, and an ACC team willingly said, here's a full ride. We want you to come play football for us, you know?
Yes,
but here's where you're losing me. Here's where I'm getting a little confused. If your early athletic aspirations were on the track, you willingly made the divorce from track because you willingly put on the extra 30 pounds that would no longer, you know, allow you to run the way you needed to run to be a track star. So if your early dream was about track, why did you alter? And why don't you just say, you know what? I'm good with football. I'm done. I'm just going to run.
Honestly, because Rondé couldn't do it.
Wow.
Honestly, that's what it came down to.
Wow.
Rondé couldn't do it. So I didn't want to be there by myself.
Wow, I never knew that.
And so it's interesting. In high school, the hurdles, I forget how high the hurdles are, how tall they are. Mm-hmm. So in high school, Rondé, who like me is only 5'9" and a half, 5'10", you know, he was so easy for him to go over the hurdles. When you get into college, they raise up, like, okay. I think it's like 2 or 3 inches.
Well, that's a pretty big jump.
And so it's a big jump for him. And so, yeah, high school boys' hurdles are 39. I think in college it's 42. Yeah, so high school boys' hurdles are 39 inches. In college, it's 42 inches. Now, that 3 inches might seem like nothing, but it had a big impact on his ability to run them. And so he wasn't as successful in college because the hurdles were a little bit higher.
Okay.
And then he got hurt, and then he couldn't train. And then he just said, you know, I'm going to focus on football. And collectively, we just said, we're going to focus on football.
Wow. So final thing on this. This is fascinating. I never knew it quite to that extent. I've always obviously known your passion for the sport of track and field, but I never really knew why you went away from it. If Rondé had not been injured or both, had more success with the hurdles, and you stayed on that path, do you think you would have been in the Olympics, honestly?
Yeah, I do.
Wow.
I honestly do.
I believe you.
I was getting good at it.
I believe you, bro.
I set the school record on my first jump, and that was kind of without even training. You know what I mean? It was kind of just like coming from football and, you know, in the fall, and then coming right out to the track and field team and starting to train for 3 or 4 weeks. And, okay, we have a meet. I go and jump 42.8 or 24.8 on my first jump, which was a school record. It's like, man, I could get up to 26 or 27, which would put me on an elite level in a couple of years when I got stronger.
Yeah, of course. And you learn technique a little bit better, the biomechanics.
Exactly,
sure.
Exactly.
Instead, you still have the record or no?
No. It got broken probably about 5 or 6 years ago. And I remember because the now track coach found me and he told me.
I was out of respect.
Yeah, he was. He was up there for a long time.
That's right.
You should be proud, but it got eclipsed.
Good story. All right. Hopefully everybody enjoyed that. I enjoyed hearing that.
But by the way, BTS that, because that's why I love having track and field guests on.
Oh, I know.
And so when these Olympic guests, it was my, that's what I wanted to do.
Of course.
I wanted to be an Olympian.
That's why I wanted to give you a real chance and a real platform to expand on that, because I didn't know all of that. That was pretty awesome. All right. Coming up next here, Teak, the NBA is still on hiatus. Going to be on hiatus for a long time. So we'll pass the time and get some thoughts from Al Harrington. He could fill it up back in the day. Al Harrington's going to stop by. Cool dude. Join us next here on Teak and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. All right. We know you want some college hoops. Trust me. We get it. We're all salivating for it. And this is what it's about this time of the year. So tune in to CBS and CBS Sports Network all week long for NCAA Tournament Rewind. Relive some of the best moments from March Madness. Teaky He's getting his fill tonight. A little back-to-back-to-back Virginia Cavaliers as they go from the Elite Eight to the Final Four to the championship. So he got dissed the other night when they ran the old 116 matchup, and UMBC just beat him up a little bit. And now Tiki flexed on the air, and Sean McManus and everybody reacted, and they're going to reward him now. Tiki and Tierney here, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network. Tiki, this our next guest is an overall good guy, really good dude, could fill it up as well, big-time scorer, longtime NBA player. Talking about Al Harrington, who's with us here on Tiki and Tierney. What up, Al? How you doing, buddy?
Chilling, man. What's up with you guys? How y'all doing?
Man, pretty good, man. Pretty good. No complaints, right, Tiki?
We are doing fantastic. You know, I got to ask you first off, Al, about your company, Viola Brands. Now, we met a couple of years ago at a conference out in California, and talking about your journey and, you know, how you got into this business, this cannabis business. Now, how's it going, first of all? Because your mission is an important one. You are obviously creating a cannabis business, minority-led, and hopefully trying to impact the social inequalities that have resulted from the war on drugs. Tell us about the business real quick, because I think it's important given the state of the world that we're in right now.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the business is, you know, it's tough. You know, it's definitely not easy. You know, there's a lot of ups and downs, but, you know, at the end of the day, you know, for me, what I've been able to build has been something that's been pretty smooth. You know, to your point, finding purpose in what I'm doing and what our company is about definitely, you know, allowed us to really be able to know exactly where we're trying to go. And, you know, to your point, it's really about just uplifting, educating, and empowering, you know, communities of color and community that was mostly affected by the war on drugs. So, you know, at this point, you know, obviously we're dealing with all this COVID stuff. You know, it's very challenging. But at the end of the day, you know, people are definitely, you know, using cannabis to, you know, get through this time. And, you know, you think about all the other options that they have. This is definitely one that I feel is a lot safer. And I'm happy that people are turning towards cannabis during this time instead of some of the other things that are out there.
Yeah, no, it's a very good point. And you know, it's interesting because the NFL and a new collective bargaining agreement have decriminalized, I'll use that word as the best way to describe it, and not punishing anymore substance of abuse, including cannabis. I think the NBA for a while has been ahead of that. But, you know, there's been so many other, I think, meaningful uses for cannabis, and including anxiety and pain relief and all those things. I think we're at an inflection point, like a moving point from a sports standpoint on how this substance is used and viewed. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, 1,000%. And, you know, one of the things with the NFL, like I'm waiting, you know, obviously to see the fine print on it, because what they're saying is they're not going to suspend the players anymore. But, you know, my whole thing is why are they still even testing them?
Yeah.
Right? You know what I'm saying? You don't test them when they come in the locker room to find out if they were drinking alcohol. And, you know, obviously things that are way more detrimental to the, you know, to the success of what, you know, to what they're trying to accomplish on the court or on the field. But, you know, I think that, you know, all the sports have to, you know, kind of sit back and just look at the evidence, you know, the proofs in the pudding at this point. You know, there's so many different studies and different things that are available that, you know, have proven that cannabis can help in so many different ways. And, you know, when you think about athletes, you know, obviously, you know, we put our bodies through a lot of stuff where, you know, we need, you know, anti-inflammatory, you know, things and different things like that. But when you talk about anxiety and just the everyday stress, you know, and a lot of us, you know, we all run to liquor, you know what I'm saying,
yep,
to deal with a lot of that stress. And then obviously if you somehow, you know, get hooked on a pain, some pain pills and different things like that, the opioids, and now you're going down another slippery slope to me where, you know, it's way more dangerous than, you know, someone that decides to, you know, eat an edible or smoke a joint after a game. So, you know, I just, you know, the one thing I always do when I talk to, you know, teams and training staff and stuff, I just ask them, you know, like if you had a player, what would you recommend they use? You know, which vice would you rather them use to get through a tough time? And, you know, 90% of the time they all say, you know, when you put it like that, they would rather them use cannabis.
Mm-hmm. Just don't go old Dion Waiters on them and pop too many of those those edibles, right, Al? You got to make sure you know what you're taking, buddy, huh?
Edibles are dangerous.
You got it. Yeah, you definitely got to know what you're taking. And, you know, edible, I always say edible education is one of the biggest things that we need to do, you know, and take a more forward approach to is, you know, teaching people about edibles, because people just think that, you know, when you take something, you want that immediate impact. You know what I'm saying? And with edibles, depending on what you ate, just depending on your body type. There's a lot of different variables that come in where you just have to wait. And I could just see him as an athlete because it happened to me. You know, I've had an edible story like that too. Just thank God I wasn't on the team playing. From where, you know, I took it 30 minutes later, I'm like, this didn't do anything. I must be too big. 10 milligrams is nothing. And then I took another 20 and another 30. And next thing you know, I'm sitting there like, where am I? You know what I'm saying? So, you know, but it's just the education and, you know, the good thing about it. It's just like liquor. You think about it. The first time you drank, you probably had too much too. You probably potentially threw up and had a hangover. But, you know, the next time, you know, I can only handle one or two shots. I can't handle 10. Mm-hmm. So I think it's just trial and error, and you know, the good thing about it is that you won't die from it.
That's true. That's true. But you know, I've always said this about the edibles. Like, and you know, the old line from Snoop Dogg is, "There's no off switch with the edibles." So, you know, I get that. Right. You know, at least if you're putting something up to your lips, you take a little pop. All right, I feel good. All right, maybe I'll take a little more. Okay, I feel good. All right, now I'm really let me put this down for a little bit here, and then you can put it down. But if you the edibles, when you ingest it, there's nowhere to run, nowhere to hide. So it requires education. There's no doubt. And we're talking to Al Harrington with us here on the show. Al, you know what I wanted to ask you? You really were, and I don't know that you get classified this way by enough people, because you played for a bunch of teams, seven or eight teams, and you really were a big-time scorer. I mean, now, you like to get those shots up. Let's call it for what it is. Al was not afraid to get those 20 shots up a night if he had to do it. Some of the cities that, like, you played in Golden State before, like, it was the Warriors. You know what I mean? You played for the Knicks when the Knicks were down. You played for the Pacers to start, a great basketball city. What was your coolest NBA experience? Because you played in some pretty unique situations and circumstances.
Yeah, man, it's mixed, man. I mean, I find joy kind of in everywhere I was at, except for like two stops, and I won't name them. But, you know, New York for me was just, you know, a dream come true. I grew up a Knicks fan, you know what I'm saying? And I remember the night I got drafted by the Pacers, I actually was pissed. I'm like, I got to go play with Reggie Miller.
Nice.
I'm like, I got to go play with Reggie. but, you know, Indiana was a great stop. I mean, that was obviously where the most success I had, you know, from a team standpoint, getting to the Eastern Conference Finals two times and getting to the finals. But I will say the most fun I had was in Golden State, man. You know, that year, you know, getting traded there in January, being out of the playoffs, you know, I think towards the end of that year, we had to win like 16 out of 19 games to make the eighth seed. Made the eighth seed and then knocked off the number one seed in the West. And, you know, that was a three-month period, but it felt like we was together for years. And, like, the bonds that I built with those guys on that team, like, literally, you know, the core of that team, we talk once a week still.
Oh, wow. Wow, that's cool.
So, you know, I would say Golden State is, you know, for me was the most fun and, the one stop where it just really, really stuck out for me.
Al, nice. When you look at the NBA right now and they're currently in a stoppage, we don't know how long this is going to go on for, and we talk about how this is going to impact the players. But, you know, I'm wondering, because you were in a lot of different places, as you mentioned, from Indiana to Atlanta, and you've been with the Knicks for a couple of years, and in Denver and Orlando. The fandom is, you know, how do you think the fandom is going to be affected by this?
You know what? I think, you know, I was like, in any tragedy, I feel like sports is one of the things that people always like kind of, you know, come together around, you know. So I think that, you know, when this thing does stop, I think people are going to come out in droves. Like, they're going to want to be entertained so bad. You know what I'm saying? I think that every market, whether it's Sacramento or the Lakers, you know what I'm saying? I think that everybody's going to show up and, you know, and have a reason to cheer at this point. You know what I'm saying? I even read something where Mark Cuban was talking about, hopefully in May that we can get back to sports and even with nobody in the arena, just so people can just have, you know, something that they can look at and kind of get away from, you know, the boredom that we're all dealing with right now. You know what I'm saying? I would give anything for a 5-on-5 game right now.
No, man. No kidding. It's getting brutal. You know, so you went right from high school. I'm trying to remember your recruitment, and you are a local kid, as you said, a local, you know, we're both in New Jersey, Teak and I. What, I'm sure almost every school was chasing you, but if you didn't go right from high school, where were you going to go? I never knew the answer to that.
Yeah, you know, I was a late bloomer, so believe it or not, I didn't have everybody high and heavy on me until going into my senior year. Yeah. obviously CM Hall, Tommy Emeka was there at the time, and, you know, he was playing a great father figure role for me, like, during that time, and, you know, so he definitely was pulling at my heartstrings, and, you know, but it was just CM Hall, and I grew up literally, like, 4 miles from CM Hall, so it was just, to me, it just didn't feel like it was going to be the college experience. I like St. John's, but, you know, and Fran Fischella was there, and I love St. John's, and thing about playing in the Garden was another, you know, thing that I was thinking about, but they didn't have any college campus. So the one school that stuck out for me that I think that I would have went to was Georgia Tech.
No, okay.
My grandmother, yeah, my grandma's and my family, they had just moved out there. So I had family there, and I always loved going to Atlanta. So I think if I would have went to college, I definitely would have chose Georgia Tech.
I'm trying to remember. Al, we don't have a lot of time left, but was that the end of Kremens, or was that Paul Hewitt stepping in at that point? Who was coaching then? I forget.
I had OG Krems, baby. White
okay, gotcha. Gotcha.
Nice.
Gotcha. Well, listen, man, you know, don't take too many. You know, you got to ration out those gummies. Make sure you do the right thing. And hey, good rapping with you.
I got an endless supply, brother, so I got to ration out anything.
Yeah, well, send us some.
He's got a great product line. You can check it out at Viola Brands. That's how you find Al's company. Appreciate you, Al. Good to catch up with you again.
Thanks, guys. You guys be safe.
Yep, you too, man. Thanks a lot. Al Harrington, long time in the NBA. Just a great disposition. He's always been viewed as, you know, really cordial with the media, even when he was a player. Just one of the good guys around the NBA. He's doing well. He's doing great off the court, too.
Yeah, no, he always has been that way. You know, it's funny, when you travel around as much as he did, some people can look at it as a detriment, but you end up making, like, so many different relationships and friendships so that, you know, post-career, like, the world is open to you because you know so many people.
I feel like he had a sneaker. This is when he was with the Knicks for a year or two, and he obviously wasn't a marquee player, and the Knicks were bad, but he used his platform. I'm positive he had a low-level sneaker in Kmart or Walmart back in the day to try to appeal to the underserved. Just a good guy. He's got a great perspective. All right, a star quarterback is unhappy with his current team. Can they smooth it over? That's next.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.